Welcome to the award-winning Doing Customer Experience Right podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Sherman, a professional global speaker and CX expert. This show is about action over theory, focusing on applying proven strategies to deepen customer relationships and increase loyalty as your competitive advantage. Besides achieving better human and business outcomes, each episode aims to elevate your professional and personal growth too. To continue learning, please subscribe to my newsletter at doingcxright.com. Today, I'm diving deep into the core principles of John Peekow's book, From Impressed to Obsessed, focusing on elevating customer loyalty for ROI growth. We're talking about tactical ways to transform satisfactory interactions into moments of deep connection and loyalty. You'll learn about real-world impact of exceptional customer service, the metrics that showcase the ROI of these efforts, and how to gain positive word of mouth, as that's an incredible marketing tool to keep customers coming back and to grow your business. Now, let's get started. Hello, John Peekow. Welcome to the Doing CX Right show.
Hello, Stacey. Good to be here with you.
Oh, I am so thrilled to be here with you, especially because we are now really together. We had some technology failures, which is funny for two people who are really about customer experience, and yet technology was not working.
Are you going to ask for a manager?
I don't even know. Some things are really out of your control. And, you know, what do you do when that happens? And, well, we'll get into that.
Punches.
That's exactly right. So please tell my audience, who are you? What do you do for a living?
So I'm John Peekow. I'm an author, a speaker, as well as the founder and principal of Watermark Consulting, which is a customer experience advisory firm that essentially helps companies to impress their customers and inspire their employees.
Mm. And what's a fun fact that people might not know about you?
Perhaps that I got my start in business as a radio DJ selling radio ads door to door with businesses.
Oh, I do like that fun fact, for sure. And I bet you learned a lot about customer experience in that experience.
I did indeed. Actually, that was the experience that sort of got me focused on going into business. Yeah.
All right. Well, intuition is strong here. One question I ask everybody on my show, and it's deep. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready for it.
If you could go back in time to your younger 20-year-old self, based on what you know now that you didn't know then, what would you say to the younger John?
Well, let's see. One, buy stock in a little-known internet startup called Amazon.com. And two, if you're ever invited on a podcast with Stacey Sherman, accept the invite.
Love that.
In truth, I think actually the thing that I would tell my 20-year-old self probably wouldn't be of much value to your listeners, because it's very personalized. But when I was 20 years old, I was just graduating college, and my degree in college was in cognitive science. And the focus of my study, and actually my senior thesis, was around artificial intelligence. It was understanding how the human mind worked and getting computers to replicate that. And so when I was 20, I was actually looking for jobs with AI companies. And there were some back then, but they weren't that big. And so there weren't many jobs. And so I ended up taking a different track. But I think I might go back to myself, a 20-year-old, and say, you know, stick it out. Try to find something, because back then people had been predicting that AI was going to go mainstream, you know, at any moment, always since the 1950s. So I think I would tell myself, you know what, in your lifetime, it actually might happen and you might want to ride that wave. So I think that's the advice I'd give myself.
That's fabulous and very, very insightful. Correlates a little bit to my experience. My thesis, when I went from my master's, I actually found it. And I have to send you a picture. The thesis, like a really big thesis, is called "What is the Internet?"
That was the thesis you wrote.
It was the thesis, yes. And I looked back at it and it's just so funny. It's hilarious to read now. Yeah, it reminded me what you were talking about. Oh my.
So you're an internet expert.
I'm an internet expert, but I also laugh because I was at AT&T and one of my jobs was selling dial-up to the internet. It was called WorldNet. And it was, you know, dial-ups, the best thing since sliced bread. So, you know, like that was my job. And it's just so funny to reflect on that. And for you, the AI.
It gives you good stories to tell.
Definitely. So let's get to the heart of the topic here, which is really about customer experience and going from impressed to obsessed about customer loyalty and customer experience. So let's start out, since this is the Doing CX Right show, what does doing experience right mean to you?
We could spend the whole show, right, diving into that. If I had to explain what I view as doing CX right, I would say there are two things I would highlight. The first is making sure that everyone understands just what that term means. Because people throw that term around and it means very different things to different people. And, you know, just to give you an example of the unpacking that I think is required, when I think customer and customer experience, I have a very broad definition of that. Sometimes that might be a consumer in a B2C business. It might be a business owner in a B2B business. It could be a distributor, a supplier. It could even be a colleague that just sits a few steps down the hall from you. Those are all types of customers for whom a tailored experience should be delivered. And then the word experience too, you know, needs to be unpacked, because many people, I think, use that term synonymously with service, the service experience. But customer experience to me is very different from customer service and a service experience. It's much broader than that. And so when I think of the word experience, I'm really thinking about every live, print, and digital interaction point that your sales prospects or your customers could possibly stumble across when interacting with your business. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first thing, is making sure everybody has a level set definition around just what the term customer experience is. And then I think the second key thing to doing CX right is to really understand that it's about stagecraft. And what I mean by that is, I've always believed that a great customer experience is like a beautifully choreographed stage performance. And the reason that I like that analogy is because, if you think about it, the reaction that any business really wants to elicit from its customers is one of like an audience in a theater having just seen a spectacular performance. And what happens? They rise to their feet. They give a standing ovation. They don't even want to leave the theater. They're so enamored with what they just saw. And eventually, by the time they're ready to leave, they can't wait to tell other people about that performance. That's the kind of reaction you want to elicit. And if you take that analogy a step further, I think that in customer experience, there's an onstage component that you have to manage, and there's a backstage component. And to me, that's an important part of doing CX right. The onstage being all the things your customers can see, feel, hear, touch, and smell. All the traditional things you think about with customer experience: websites, billing statements, retail interactions, all of that. But then there's the backstage piece, which in my view are things that are completely invisible to your customer, but nevertheless exert a very meaningful influence on the quality of the performance or the experience that could be delivered to them. And by that, I mean things like how you hire and select people, how you onboard and train them, how you reward and recognize them, what tools you equip them with. And so doing CX right to me requires getting the definition right, but then also recognizing that confluence of factors across onstage and backstage in order to create that beautifully choreographed experience that people rave about.
Mm. Very well said. Now, many companies are doing it right. And a lot of companies are still skeptical because they haven't figured out the ROI that they require to invest in doing CX right. What do you say to those companies listening who are skeptical?
Two things. You know, first, I think that a lot of companies, what they get hung up with is they think that the only benefit of a great customer experience is in increased revenue. Greater retention, greater referrals and whatnot. And that is indeed one of the key benefits. But the problem is that's very hard for people to quantify sometimes. And so that scares them. You know, how do I know that it's really going to deliver a boost on my revenue line? What I think that companies need to understand and skeptical executives need to appreciate is that not only does customer experience drive greater revenue, but it also helps you to control, if not reduce, your operating expenses. A great customer experience can actually cost less to deliver because if you're doing things right upstream in the experience, it actually obviates the need for people to contact you downstream. And so you see really meaningful savings in customer service expenses and things like that because there's less stress being put on your operating infrastructure from all of those people that are contacting you with issues or problems or complaints that just go away if you're doing experience right from the very beginning. So that's one thing I would tell people who are skeptical. The other thing I would point to is a study that kind of put my firm Watermark on the map over a decade ago. And that is the Watermark Consulting Customer Experience ROI study. Frankly, Stacey, it was born out of my own frustration in this regard. When I launched my own firm, I knew the only way it was going to be successful is if I could get executives to engage in this discussion, to get them past that deep-seated skepticism that they have about whether there really is a tangible ROI to customer experience. And I remember vividly, it was the holiday season in 2009. And I was thinking to myself, how do you prove this to people? And what dawned on me is you really need to speak to the C-suite in a language they can understand. And I concluded that that language was shareholder value, because that's a metric, whether you're a public or a private company, everybody kind of gets that who's running a business. And so that was the genesis of the customer experience ROI study, which basically looked at the top performing public companies in customer experience and compared their shareholder returns with the worst in customer experience. And we've updated the study every few years. Now there's 13 years of data in the study. And the customer experience leading firms outperform the laggards by an over 3-to-1 ratio. And when you see the bar graph illustrating that, where not only do the leaders outperform the laggards, but the leaders outperform the market index, and the laggards underperform the market index. So, it's a very clear pecking order. And you look at the stratification there of that bar graph, and it's just like, it just hits you in the face. Like, wow, there really is something here. You know, this isn't soft and fuzzy. This is very real, very tangible, and it's something that you can take to the bank, as, the smart companies are doing.
Yeah, I bet people listening are saying, how do I get that study? So you'll have to share that for,
I can put a link in your show notes for that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's gold. So when you talk about the ROI and obviously reducing churn and boosting that retention, it's so important. Yet many companies are so focused on acquisition. Let me get more sales, but they neglect their current customers. And I believe that you can double your income from your existing customers. What do you say to that?
I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy because it's probably even more than double. I think that people, grossly underestimate the financial lift that they can get by doing right from their existing clientele, not only in terms of those folks sticking around longer, but many studies have shown that those happy, loyal customers, they are less price sensitive because they focus not just on the cost of a particular transaction, they focus on the value of the whole relationship they have with you. And when they're less price sensitive, you can derive greater revenue from them. You also find that those happy, loyal customers tend to entertain ideas for other products and services from you. So you gain greater wallet share. That helps to boost your revenue. So there is a lot of data out there that shows that shows just how being good to your existing customers is very much rocket fuel for your business. It's not to suggest that you stop seeking to acquire new ones, but you are absolutely right that so many companies are obsessed with the hunt for new customers that they completely neglect the ones that they already have under the umbrella, and they take them for granted. And, you know, they do that at great risk to themselves.
Mm-hmm. I would add that a lot of companies are measuring NPS, which is good if you're not measuring anything. Start with that. But 2 points. One, it blows my mind that they'll get a set of promoters and they don't do anything with them, right? So you talk about referrals. Like here, they're saying, "I love you, and I will recommend you." Give them a way to do that.
I think that you're absolutely right. We as human beings, and I think especially people who are in business, they are at their heart fixers, problem solvers. And so when you see a customer that is a, you know, promoter on the net promoter scale or highly satisfied, I think many business people look at that and say, my job is done here. You know, I'm good. But in truth, there's so much that you can capitalize on by leveraging the voice of that promoter, of getting them to understand how other products and services that you have that might be of relevance to them. I think that's true. And actually, you know, it makes me think of something that just recently happened to me at my the place where I bank at, my local bank branch. So here's the backstory. I finally left the bank that I was doing business with for, gosh, probably 10, 15 years because I hated them so much, you know. And banks, they count on the friction that's required to switch. And that's how they can be so bad to their customers, because they just know, well, nobody's going to go through the hassle of switching. Well, I finally, you know, went through the hassle. And anyway, I went to this new bank and the branch manager was just super helpful. And I said to her at the end of our whole discussion, after I opened my accounts, I said, you know, I'd like to tell your manager, like, what a great job you did. Can you give me that person's email? And so she did. And I wrote that gentleman, and I was shocked that I never heard anything in response. And I mean, this was a glowing email where I was just sort of extolling all the virtues of this branch manager and how wonderful she was to work with. And then I was shocked that someone in the organization, when getting a note like that from a customer who was clearly a promoter at that point, didn't even have the courtesy to respond and say, wow, thanks so much. You know, we're so glad. So that's another example to me where, you know, obviously you want to follow up on the customer feedback that comes in that's really negative. But you know what? You should probably follow up on the feedback that comes in that's super positive as well.
Yes. Two comments to that. One, I recently did that at a hotel where the woman at the hotel was A, empowered to fix a mistake, and B, I asked her for her name and contact information of her boss. Now, similar to you, I didn't get a response from the boss, but what I did get was that employee, that front line, was so grateful that nobody ever asks her to, mm-hmm. and offers to put a compliment in. So we're just doing good even in that.
Yeah. And you want to make it, you always talk about, you want to make it easy for customers to complain because complaints are a gift, but you also want to make it easy for customers to compliment. Because like you saw, when you create an avenue for customers to easily praise the people that are assisting them, that's a morale booster for the people on the team who are getting those kudos. So you want to make it effortless for customers to provide that praise.
Yes. Now, speaking of praise and being impressed and being obsessed with the brand, what is the difference?
And, you know, we should probably mention, because you keep using those terms, but I never actually said the title of the book that I wrote was From Impressed to Obsessed. So that would probably, we probably want your listeners to realize that, because they're like, Stacy, why are you going off on this impressed obsessed thing? But That's the reason.
Well, they'll read it in the show notes too. But yes, this is very intentional, everybody. And I want, John, for you to explain, what is the difference between impressed and obsessed? And how does it relate to keeping loyal customers who come again and tell others?
Impressed and obsessed is sort of, that's pretty high up on the spectrum. You know, if you can impress, that's really good. You're doing a nice job. If you can get people obsessed about you, even better. You know, sort of below those rungs are things like being satisfied or neutral or dissatisfied. You know, what I would say is, in my mind, the difference between impressed and obsessed to me connotes a real emotional connection, you know, where by virtue of whatever it is that the business has done, be it the products that you're using from them, the service that they've provided, that not only are you wowed, not only are you impressed, but you actually start to cross the line where you almost like orient your life around this company. Like you seek them out. You know, if you're in another city and, you know, you're looking for a place to eat, and there's a favorite restaurant, like you're looking for that restaurant that you're obsessed with first. And so that's really the differentiator to me, is that emotional connection. And, you know, something I talk about in the book, that is one of the key principles that's described in the book. And a quote that I love that I mentioned in the book is from a social psychologist by the name of Jonathan Haidt. He's a professor at NYU. And he once said, "The emotional tail wags the rational dog." And, you know, he actually wasn't talking about that in a business context, but I think it has a lot of relevance in the business world, because people's decisions about who to do business with to begin with, and then whether they continue doing business, and whether they are impressed or whether they are obsessed, that is actually going to be driven less by their rational, logical evaluation of the product, of the service, of the encounter, and more by the emotional resonance, you know, how they are made to feel when using that product, when interacting with a representative of that company. And so to me, that's the big differentiator. And that's when I think you start to cross into that obsessed column, when you have that emotional attachment.
Mm. All right. So somebody listening, they're either an entrepreneur, they're in a small or mid-sized company, or they're in an enterprise, and they're sitting here listening and saying, "Oh, I want customers to be obsessed with our products, our services, our company." They're wondering, well, how do I know if they are? What would you say to those people? How do you measure that?
Yeah. So I am, you mentioned Net Promoter earlier, and, you know, there are people who are absolutely religious about certain measurement systems, whether it's Net Promoter or customer effort score. I'm not going to say that I'm a zealot about any of them. I think that they all have their merits. I think Net Promoter, if done right, can be a very effective tool, not only for measuring the quality of the customer experience, but also helping to encourage a culture that is oriented around that. So that's the first way I would answer, is I think that there are voice of the customer measures that you absolutely want to look at, and you want to make sure that there are external metrics that you are using to create a reality check for your internal metrics. Because so often companies, they sort of obsess, we talk about obsessing, they obsess over some internal gauges. And those internal gauges, they might all be in the green and you think you're doing great. But then eventually when you actually go out and you start talking to customers and ask how you're doing, you realize that all the things that you were measuring internally were of no value to your customer. That's a problem. And so that's the first thing I would say, is I see value in voice of the customer metrics, such as surveys, for example. There are other ways too that you can infer from sentiment analysis and whatnot of phone calls, whether people are happy or not. I think also the other way to measure is by actually looking at the behavior of your customers. A lot of organizations are not very sophisticated in how they measure where their business is coming from. Are you asking people when they come through the door, how did you find us? Was it a referral from another customer? Was it some positive word of mouth that you saw on a social media platform? by tracking that, you can actually start to get a sense of how much business is being driven your way by virtue of the experience that you're creating. And so I think that those kinds of financial metrics can be also very helpful in quantifying the impact that you're making.
Very, very good. I want to ask you another question around leadership. We know that you can't have a great customer experience if there's no leadership, and really good leadership, customer-centric leadership. So when you think about the internal staff, the internal workforce that fuels the outside experience, what is the best advice you've received or you've given to others as a leader? What's that leadership gold?
So what I've always said to people that I've coached and mentored in my career is realize that the teams that you lead, they don't serve you, you serve them. And that your job as a leader is to pave the path for them to realize their potential and to be the best that they can be. And that requires removing obstacles from their path that they are unable to remove themselves. And something that I've seen, you know, before I launched my own consultancy, I was in corporate executive roles for over 15 years. And something that I saw time and time again was when you as a leader remove one of those obstacles from the path of your team members, of your staff, they'll walk through walls for you. After that, you know, when they see that you are taking a genuine interest in helping them to be the best that they can be by giving them the tools that they need, by removing whatever hindrances and impediments they face day to day, that's just going to endear them to you as a leader, and they're going to be fired up to do the best job that they can. So that would be my best leadership advice. And, you know, it's really no different than what you try to do for customers. You know, you try to help customers be successful. And that's why in the book, you know, I really draw very little distinction between how do you create people who are impressed and obsessed who are buying products from you versus those who are employed by you. Because the parameters to do both are actually quite similar.
Yeah, I just had a big sigh because I had a boss that said to me, after I tried every solution and I went to this person and I asked for help, and the answer was no, go figure it out. And I was so angry, but here's the good news. I now figure everything out. So you learn a lot from good managers and not so good.
Take that lesson. It is no fun working for a leader that you don't have any respect for. But it, in a way, it puts stripes on your shoulders and you learn about things to do differently when you're in that kind of capacity.
Yes. Well, final question, as we're ending in time, I told you it goes fast, which is, what is your one takeaway you want people to remember or to go do? Because this is doing CX, right? What's that one go do?
The thing I would want people to take away is understanding that if you are aspiring to satisfy your customers, then you are aspiring to mediocrity. Customer satisfaction is overrated. Customer satisfaction is a one-way ticket to the business graveyard. And the reason I say that is because study after study has shown that satisfied customers defect all the time. They just leave. So if you really want to derive competitive advantage in your business from the customer experience you deliver, it's not enough to merely satisfy your customers. You need to impress them. You need to leave that indelible impression in their minds that's going to cultivate the repurchase and referral behavior that's really the lifeblood of any thriving company. That would be my advice.
And the do part of getting them obsessed, what would be one thing? How do you get them obsessed?
Yeah, to get help their customers become obsessed with them. I I'll go back to that emotional piece. I think it is stepping into the shoes of your customers and understanding how that which you are doing through your company, the products you're selling, the services you're providing, how is it making that customer feel? You know, at that moment in time, whatever environment they're in, whatever circumstances that they have, don't think about how they are logically and rationally going to evaluate the interaction. Think about how it makes them feel. And the example I love to give people is, imagine if you call a contact center to get service, and every time you call, they pick up the phone in 10 seconds flat with a live person, no automated greeting. If you look at that, you might say logically and rationally, wow, that's a pretty good experience. But if after speaking with the reps in that contact center, if I am made to feel like I was a burden on them, if I was made to feel embarrassed or stupid in some way, it doesn't matter that you picked up the phone in 10 seconds or less flat, right? So that would be my advice, is always look through the lens of emotion and how your customers are being made to feel after the interaction they're having with you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. And I will share your book and your research and all about you and your socials in the show notes so people can find you. And thank you for the gift of you today.
And thank you, Stacey, for all the work that you're doing to spread the gospel around how to do CX right. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining today. I hope you will apply the lessons shared, and also requesting if you would leave a review on Apple would mean a lot. Head over to doingcxright.com to learn more ways to connect with me and improve your CX. Until next time, I'm Stacey Sherman, doing CX right.